Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your host and enchantress of the night, Mikaela Ann. This week we are welcoming witch, astrologer, artist, folk psychopomp, and dear friend, Jove Spoochy, onto the cast to talk about nightlife, Eros, and the magic woven in queer and liminal spaces. In this episode, we take a deep dive into the magical potency of nightlife by discussing Jove's experiences weaving liminal magic within dance floors, through sound, and within communities that embrace the intersections between art, music, queerness, and the divine. Drawing their own experiences as nightlife builder, inspirited dancer, and magical practitioner, through intuitive self-expression and surrender to desire, Jove takes us on a journey through sound, magic, and art. How does dance help us feel safe in our bodies? What are the similarities of otherness between those who identify as queer versus witch? How can we take the undulating energy of desire and use it to shape a world in which we all get to surrender to safety, intimacy, and vulnerability of heart through the ecstasis of the moon and the Dionysian impulse to purge through the creation of feral artistic expression? All this and more on today's episode of Saturn Vox. This podcast brought to you in part by listeners like you. If you want to support the show and its humble host, hop on over to the Patreon at www.patreon.com/SaturnVox, where you can listen to extended episode content and join in our community Discord server.
Thanks, Mikaela. Really excited to chat with you today. And as a little introduction, I'm a witch, an astrologer, an artist, and a bit of a folk psychopomp, and love exploring relationships with spirit through things like Buteau, underground dance music, nightlife, performance art, and all of this through a very queer lens. And client work, I give a lot of counsel on helping folks develop magical practices and really coming with mindfulness and coming with more devotional type experiences with spirit.
Oh, lovely. I love the relational aspect that you're bringing to the table between like you as the witch and the psychopomp between spirit and this upper world. I'm really tantalized by the connection between that and nightlife. Do you think you could like go into a bit more of the connection between those two for you?
Absolutely. Nightlife for me has always been the pressure release valve. Even when I was really young, sort of throwing dance parties in the basement or whatnot, it was a place where I could be in my body and really connect with music on a level that was free from language and was a really expressive way to be in certain energies and evoke happier ones, especially in tough times. And as soon as I could, I was out in nightlife spaces and found the liminality there so freeing, so healing to be able to disappear on the dance floor, but also have this connected experience with everyone around you is really, even without substances, a form of ego loss, I think, that is really important to being a very fleshy human in a way that is lost in so much of our culture today. And I think it being at night, there's freedom from the structures of the world, the more Apollonian things, and really being able to get into that lunar and embodied witchy state. And so I started going out probably 16, 17. I was at a concert, and all of a sudden, as I was leaving, right under a spotlight, walking outside, there's an ID, someone's ID, perfectly centered on the ground in front of me. And I pick it up, look around, see if I can find the person, but looks enough like me, is pretty much the right height and whatnot. And I was like, oh, that's my ticket. So I was too scared to drink or anything. I just wanted to go dance. And so that was my pathway into the sort of nightlife of Salt Lake at the time. And it was a really powerful counterculture there to escape from the very sort of oppressive presence of the Mormon Church, the LDS Church. Mm-hmm. And so it was there that I really felt the sort of ecstasis that came with dancing, and for a long time, and the sort of Gnostic experiences that came with that, where I felt like I'd get bouts of inspiration after dancing for a while, or would have connections with family members who had passed, or spiritual ideas and things like that that were very nascent at the time. But it really led me into a set of experiences that I later realized were spirit work. I really didn't understand what was happening at the time, but there was almost a possessory experience of being lost in the music and body, kind of learning a certain kind of language of how to inhabit space with being driven by a rhythm that it kind of takes over in a way. And that was, I think, the introduction for me into further knowledge and conversation, if you
will. Oh, I love that. And I actually highly relate. I remember the very first times, like, I would go to, like, the club and, like, go to a really, like, I guess I was going to dubstep in D&B, like, liquid drum and bass shows and stuff. And I remember dancing on the floor, feeling like in the seat of primal power.
Yes.
And I was like, this must be like what our ancestors felt like. And just something, even though obviously it was electronic music, there was this like intuitive connection between that sound and like trance-based drum beats.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. Yeah, like, I feel like that was my first like true religious experience, like being a person who had gone to church and like been involved in religious cults my whole life. This was the moment that I said, oh, yes, I do understand now like what they're talking about. That epiphany, that aha moment of feeling oneness with your body and with the world.
Absolutely. And I had a similar experience of being raised in every different denomination of Christianity. You can imagine I've been baptized and dunked so many times. I'm definitely covered, and never really connected with this experience that folks were having in, you know, what was called the charismatic Christian churches, where people would speak in tongues and would get very into body movements and whatnot, and have these really powerful spiritual experiences with a connection with the Holy Spirit and Jesus Christ. And I can remember, wanting to experience that, but not connecting with it in church. And it wasn't until being on a dance floor that I really felt those same things. It was like, oh, I'm sure if I were to look at myself in the mirror right now, I'd look like one of those people in one of those churches, you know, having that same kind of experience. And for me, the music was the most important part. And so I also was very into a lot of the more drum and bass sorts of things, the earthy beats with a lot of syncopation, or there's, you know, usually it's polyrhythmic in the sense that you can dance to the fast beat or the slow beat mm-hmm. at halftime. And it started a lifelong journey as a club kid, did some DJing, did some promoting, and was really interested in the scene. But it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco later that I really found the very queer dance scene. I had sort of tried to create my own when I was living in Utah and was throwing very small parties with a magical group that we're still throwing parties today. We'll meet up and work together, and it's really wonderful to have that connection. And that partying was our pressure release valve. Being in Utah, it was the way you know, we were all more or less closeted queers at that point, different levels of outness, depending on how safe it was for us. We're actually at Brigham Young University.
Oh, wow.
And we would throw parties in a literal closet, but fog machine, lasers, and a DJ setup. And it was our way of, I think, connecting with ourselves and our identities, identity making, as well as you know, this sort of secret occulted thing that we were able to do. And the bonds that we formed there have been really powerful for working magically with one another over the last decade.
Wow, that's so moving. And you know what's interesting about that is it kind of moved me to realize that a facet of your ability to navigate the queerness of spirit relationships is probably born apart in these, you know, haunted broom closet parties that are both like occulted in reveling in the monster, but also liberating the monster at the same time.
Absolutely.
Very beautiful.
That's the sort of, you know, I say folk psychopomp role that I played there, was being someone who wasn't always raised in the Mormon church, who had a little bit more, monsterish experience, that was able to share that with folks in a way that was celebratory and just scary enough to be fun but still safe. And I think it was in those spaces where we were able to have the freedom to try different aspects of our personalities on, to see who we wanted to be, coming from spaces that were highly repressive and suppressive of individuality and desire, you know, in a very loud, fogged up room. There's a lot of opportunities to express those desires without the fear of being observed. It was a shame-free zone that we all did a pretty good job at establishing. And you know, it was really interesting to take it from there, which was small. It wasn't really so much of what I wanted. At the same time, you know, I was going up to Salt Lake to throw parties, and it really, though, wasn't until San Francisco where I felt like I really got to experience the magic of queer nightlife. It's such a perfect environment, or it was. Around 2015, I think, when I lived there. And there's so many spaces, or there were so many spaces, and so many queer people doing things and experimenting with things, that every subculture you can imagine was represented in one way or another. So to be able to bounce around to those and explore sexual identity and the sort of aesthetics of all the queer subcultures was a really powerful way too to think about how can these sorts of engagement with others, whether it's dancing or kink and fetish or the aesthetics of certain types of clothing for certain types of parties, how all these things can contribute to raising energy, entering certain states and using them magically.
So can you expand on the way that those things ended up informing your praxis as a witch? Because you keep Absolutely. Using these words like the magic of queer nightlife or, you know, similar things to that. So would you mind expanding on how those two things tie together?
Absolutely. And I think there's two sides that it comes from. There was, for me personally, understanding that these states that come from dance and environment with certain lighting and lack thereof and these occulted nighttime spaces and how important that was for me to be able to explore and express myself and connect with the magical other or spirit. So in my own practice, you know, it often involves a dark room, sometimes music or not, but, you know, rhythmic breathing and dancing to reach these states. And so it was sort of a experience in the club that helped me develop this personally. And some of it just kind of happened intuitively, and some of it was seeing what I call this queer nightlife magic and the community around it and the incredible resilience and power that these groups have had for such a long time. And the Stud in San Francisco specifically was a huge turning point for me in terms of queer hopefulness and seeing how queer community, which is something that I didn't really have before unless I had built it myself, could stand in the face of so much adversity and really celebrate the vast diversity of queerness and othered folks in a way that builds community without stifling identity and individuality. And so being in these spaces and seeing everybody so uninhibited, being themselves and experimenting, being really weird, really weird. And it just adding to this beautiful vibe and seeing how everyone would react to that energy and how everyone was kind of in this almost connected amoeba and where one side would move and you could see it sort of ripple and reverberate throughout the crowd. And so, you know, it was an experience as a DJ too, that I think understanding how this nightlife group kind of functions as this meta organism and the what I feel is a really tangible energetic vibe that it's kind of like I don't know, recently I've been calling it riding the serpent, where we're all sort of channeling this this energy that feels really serpentine and figuring out how to follow its twists and turns take its bucking in stride and really integrate what it has to offer. And I feel like it's usually not till after the experience is over that you can start to do that integration. But in the moment, just figuring out how do we keep ourselves aligned with this energy that feels, I think you use the word primal. I really like that as well. It's this part of the mind that feels outside of logos, maybe the language, like pre-language sort of aspect of the mind, that it's an embodied language and it's sensations and it's imagistic, but also very much based in the erotic and the sensual.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about sounds like very in line with erotic mysticism and like this idea of theurgic expression by exalting the self and the body. I honor God. I honor the all. I honor by exalting your body and honoring yourself without shame. I exalt God, and there's something holy about that moment of complete recognition of, you know, Eden before the fall, so to speak, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think the sort of beauty of being unshackled from that, the many voices, regulatory voices we all have, to see that function on a group level, and a magic with a gravitas that can pull so many different types of people in. When, you know, you have these queer spaces that are really hidden, and there's a built-in crowd often, and you tend to know everybody, especially the ones who stick around later at night. And then sometimes you'll have other folks come in who are, you know, outside the community, outside the scene, and to see, you know, when the magic is really flowing or working that night. These people who are not familiar with the specific subculture that we're in, be taken by it and integrate and be part of the magic and then contributing to it, even though, you know, you can tell that maybe by what they're wearing or how they came in or how they were talking to folks that, you know, they were from a pretty different sort of set of culture. Seeing how that brings people together in this way. And there's just something I think that intuitively is in the human psyche to, you know, sort of gather around the fire and dance.
Oh, I love it. I feel like in some ways what you're talking about is largely theurgic, but the witch kind of component comes from that ferility. And that, like, yes. Aspect of the primal, like the snake energy. Do you think that you could expand a bit more on the connection between these nightlife energies that you're talking about and, like, the identity of the witch?
Absolutely. I think, you know, theurgy, in my understanding of it, it does feel like connection with entities that are not quite as old, where the serpent feels chthonic for sure, maybe even older, something where it's so primordial, it's the basis of all things, it's the pattern that we see in everything. And so being able to connect with it through, you know, the sound of music, that the permeations of certain frequencies that are serpentine. I think it's able to sort of undulate things on from very small scale, you know, individual atoms up to a whole human body in a really similar way. And I think that sort of possessory aspect is where a lot of the witchiness comes in, and this giving in to the feral, the animal, but definitely the shadowy aspect of self, the desires that are, I think one is connecting with in these spaces are the things that we don't do in the sun. We don't do under the watchful eye of Apollonian culture. And so I think there's a resistance aspect to it as well. What we're doing in these spaces is transgressive, maybe not so much in San Francisco, but still on a whole, I think the bringing queer bodies together, many of whom are, you know, being fueled by illegal substances, and sex acts are often happening on the dance floor, which is, you know, I'm sure breaking a million different codes, but there's this aspect of I think just pure, beautiful, dirty human that's happening. And that's for me really where the witchiness comes in.
Yes, I love that because the witch herself is always engaged in this act of filth eating and gaining power through that moment of consuming that which is otherwise taboo, feeling the ability to traverse, you know, between the world of the sublunar and the sun, and being able to hold the tension between those two things also kind of brings back into play that eroticism.
Right. I think the possessory nature of it as well, where, you know, I think this is me speaking specifically to my experience, but I think other folks, you know, especially on psychedelics and other dance world drugs would empathize with as well. But this idea that the more logical and thinking mind is not driving. It is a giving up of that agency to the other, to the magical other. And it's ordeal. There's cost that comes with that, cost on the body, but it's something that folks do, you know, taking poison for the healing.
So you're saying that any person in the engagement of nightlife culture is engaged in this kind of liminal queer magic of a sense, and even just getting on the dance floor and having that moment of ecstasis, which results in a possession, is a magic that happens to even those who wouldn't self-identify as a witch, but maybe the environment itself is casting a spell upon them.
Yeah, I wouldn't say every dance floor either. I think there are definitely spaces that you can feel this in, and I think a lot of times there is magical intent behind creating those spaces, or a legacy of magical intent. Because there are dance floors that don't have otherness as part of their story. They are separated from the lineage of where dance music comes from. We have so much of our dance music and dance culture from Black people who created the culture of these spaces, the culture of the music that we have. And there's been an aim in the underground dance world to really honor that and connect with that and highlight the histories and stories of those often queer elders who are involved in that. But I would say the EDM world, which is more, you know, like the mainstream world, I feel like hasn't honored that. And with that, I think there are certain difficulties in connecting to that source magic that arise.
I totally understand what you're saying. And in that same way, it becomes a ghostly practice. Mm. It becomes a traveling necromantic altar in which, you know, and even in a way like a land practice. Like we bring the ancestors of the land, we bring the ancestors of the tradition, of the community, of the culture. And if those tutelary spirits and ancestral elders are not honored and invoked, then the energy of the space doesn't carry the same power of intent.
Absolutely. And I think that's why the stud is so powerful, and the group that runs it is, you know, it's a cooperative, a queer cooperative that owns and runs it. And it's the longest existing queer bar in the U.S.
Wow.
And they've always been in the same neighborhood. They've had to move to a couple different spots. Unfortunately, they don't have a space right now. But, you know, I think we're all hopeful that will change pretty soon. But the folks who run it and put it together make every effort to honor the lineage that allows for us to have this space, and the folks who came before us. And there was an exhibition of the history of the stud over the pandemic, and it was beautiful to see the decades of of culture and feel how, you know, this literal space and many of the objects within it have been charged by the power of folks who are acting in resistance and creating this community and celebrating together. And I feel very, very lucky to have been able to be a part of that, both in producing a couple events or DJing an event and just being able to dance on that dance floor.
Lovely. Well, I guess I'm now interested in, like, we've established this, like, ideology around nightlife magic. What do you have to say about queerness and its connection to magic or witchcraft in general, like, outside of this space?
And I think queerness, just to define it, I don't think it particularly likes to be defined, but otherness, I think, is a good proxy for it. And that otherness, I think, in a witchy sense, where it comes with a certain cost, there's that otherness separates you from the, I guess, the big other, if you will, in a way that creates need, and magic often comes from need. And the need, I think, for queer folks in particular is to be able to see different paths when you're offered a binary. To survive, you need to be able to see that third path if you don't fit in, if your safety is threatened. And that develops a certain sense, a certain way of seeing and being and moving through the world, where I think your agency is expanded when you are forced to see the nuance of things because you don't fit in the options and answers presented to you. That's magical thinking. Mm-hmm. How do I look at these rules, these systems, the nature of things, in a way to move with and around and in between, versus just, you know, staying on the presented track. And I think especially for folks who've had to be closeted, there's a whole aspect of self that's been occulted, that's been hidden from view, that there's this part of the shadow self that is in the conscious mind. It is something that I think bridges between the conscious and unconscious. And I think there's queerness in terms of sexuality, but I think an expanded view of queerness, disabled folks, anyone who's marginalized or otherwise seen as less than because of not aligning with the norm, I think takes part in queerness and the magic thereof. And I personally think that most folks have something queer about them, but to truly be queer is to live it and to own it and to integrate it. And I think that's where the magic comes from, is in the acceptance and celebration of what it is that that makes you other, that makes you different. And with that claiming of power, I think there's a community aspect as well, where queer folks are not able to often go through life without turning to community, without seeking support, without having vulnerability. And those skills are all things I think any magician needs to be connected in the greater magical whole.
I love this. It's almost like queerness is a lived embodiment of Solvay et Coagula. I will sever off that which society claims to be myself, which I know is not. And I will then merge into the secret third thing that I was truly all along.
And there's something about that merging that doesn't, I feel like, doesn't come with the amount of compromise that comes with merging with presented options, where because the defining trait that connects us is what's different. There's so much space in that. There's so much space to have a more honest and genuine connection with someone, because it's not being compressed to a single attribute or set of attributes or ideologies. And I think the diversity in thought and the opportunity to learn is so much greater in these communities as well, because the differences are celebrated and encouraged and explored and created. I would say, like, take one look at what very queer communities create online, and it's I think, like, the deepest reaches of most complicated fractal human eros in this most intense way. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about TikTok too, is we're seeing this rapid evolution of queer subcultures and cultures in a way that they're differentiating so quickly, and the diversity of all these different niches is its own kind of magic for sure.
I love this. It's almost as if there is a perpetual creatrix being birthed through the exploration of queerness inherently by the very definition of what it is, because there is this, you know, to follow the queer path would be to say, I forge my own path, which is similarly to that of the magic practitioner who claims, like, I will create my own reality. I think there is a level of, you know, both those of us who are queer and those of us who are witches, both existing in a world that is really betwixt a binary right now, in which, it depending on where in the world you live and are, there's almost an illusion of acceptance to be a witch, or an illusion of acceptance to be queer, and then you step out of this, like, very tiny bubble of safety that's been, or, like, you know, fantasy bubble. You wake up from the dream and remember, oh yes, I am actually still quite oppressed.
Yes. Well, I think a lot of the symbols, languages, and expressions of queerness and witchiness have been co-opted by, frankly, capitalism.
Yes.
And there are versions of that are compatible, that make a profit. And, you know, we see this in gay and queer culture. You know, I'm not going to say Drag Race is a bad thing. I think visibility is great, but at the same time, it's very much a money-driven project, and there's certain aspects of queerness that I think aren't present there, or the queer magic that I see and feel at a dive drag bar like Aunt Charlie's in San Francisco, which is drag queens of all ages, experimental, weird stuff, very Twin Peaks-y. And, you know, what I feel there and the discomfort that I feel there as well is such a beautiful, magical thing that I don't think we get with things like Drag Race or a lot of the witchy culture that we see online. Feels very sanitized. The monstrous aspects of witchcraft have all been extracted and taken out, and I think there's a lot of aesthetics of the witch, and you know, those things have their own sense of power as symbols for sure, but it's, I think there's a lot of steps between that and confronting the more shadowy parts of what it means to be a witch and confer with the magical other.
You keep using this term magical other. Do you think that you can like extrapolate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, and I like that purposefully as a vague, more vague term for me, because it's I think that spirit can present itself with a bunch of different faces and simultaneously be you know, like a larger amoeba sort of thing, or a legion, and then split up into more discrete entities. So you know, I see this magical other as very much it's spirit separate from my own in whatever form it might take, and separate in the sense that that's my sort of egoic experience of it, where it feels like it's not something that's coming from me. But I do, you know, feel a certain connectedness and kinship to it, but it does feel, for me, it's the catch-all for all of these things. And it's the, sometimes there is an unknown quality to it as well, where it's interacting with things maybe larger than the scope of our understanding.
And this almost brings us back to the nightlife as well, and that like flirting with changing of the tempo of sound and changing the lighting and the occulted transgressive nature of all that, creating a liminal atmosphere.
Absolutely. And I think those, you know, set and setting is the phrase used in the psychedelic community, but I think it applies to magical practice as well, or ritual practice, where all of these things can evoke different sensations or erotic experiences within the body and within the mind, to prime us to accept interactions with spirit. And you know, I think there are many states that can be reached through environment and breathing that are similar to psychedelic experiences, and they each have their pros and cons.
I'm interested in your thoughts on how eroticism is, you know, deeply tied into all three of these areas that you've mentioned: the nightlife, the witch, and the queer lifestyle in general. Because if all three of them are ridden by the snake, and the eroticism is implicit in that snake undulation, do you think you can just like expand on that some?
Yeah, so I think the sort of, you know, when you think about how the serpentine movement of something, they're often, there's a rhythm but also a randomness to it. And so I think if you are being driven by that force, there's a certain element of chaos that's added, or divergence from just the normal rhythm. There's going to be movement on another axis, and that axis to me is what is queering things often. And so being a little to the left, a little to the right, is a queer identity and a completely different perspective relative to everyone else who's maybe you know, more aligned with a certain point. In terms of the erotic experience of that, I think being queer or othered, we, our connection to Eros is, I think, more expanded because of that different perspective point. And I think a lot of that is how open we are to accepting Eros from different ways. You know, I think the range of erotic stimulation with all these niches I was talking about on TikTok, for example, they're so specific and so intense, and it's so, you know, you could say that neurodivergence or really different sort of erotic landscapes in the brain really respond to these hyper-specific things or hyper-specific explorations like ASMR, and how some people like very specific sounds and sensations they're really able to connect with that energy that will really push them towards that ecstatic state. And so I think, you know, queerness is the space to be able to connect with those things in the way that is most specified for us, that is most aligned with our desire and our sort of resonant frequencies. And to be queer is to see that, to explore that, and to celebrate it. And in the nightlife experience, I think we are catering to those divergent desires in a lot of ways and creating space for people to really actively explore them and connect with them in a way that is supported by community, that has elders and veterans and people who can be teachers and knowledge holders, and create spaces for people to experiment and sometimes go too far and be caught and held. And I think in healthy nightlife spaces, the leaders within them are able to create that safe space for people to explore and experiment on that queerness and connect with maybe the more monstrous forms of Eros in ways that, you know, they might not be able to do if they were on their own.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. And it becomes a co-creative experience between like other queer bodies, in the same way that the relational experience between the human and the spirit is meant to be that same, like, how far can we push each other to the edge without being annihilated?
And also the sharing of connection with spirit and saying, hey, here's a queer spirit that's been, or a relationship with a queer spirit that's been handed down. And here's how you connect with it. And, you know, I think often it's the spirit of resistance or, you know, celebration of queer joy. Those are things that I really feel like I was able to learn from queer elders in particular to see. I think it's really easy to take for granted how much space queer folks have today.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everyone, there's still a lot to be done, but to understand that spirit of resistance and to participate in the legacy of the transgressive act of gathering and partying and celebrating together, I think it's a spiritual technology that I think is often taught and handed down. I think you see that in a lot of queer communities and, you know, in kink and fetish, the BDSM world for sure. I think in the drag world with drag families, we see these lineages and have their own initiations and their own cultural and magical technologies that are used. And yeah, I think to kind of answer the final arm of the question in terms of witchcraft, I think that's the overwhelm of the erotic. That is the fully letting yourself be taken by and consumed by. And the, you know, that's where you're being driven by the serpent there.
Speaking of the serpent, and you mentioned like queer spirits earlier, there's been like something tugging at the back in the back of my head, like if we're talking about another similarity between queerness, nightlife, and witches, it's their association with the devil. And that is a spirit that I think is extremely queer. And since we've been talking so much about snakes, I would think that you might have something to say about that were I to bring it up.
I think you can't have true erotic pleasure without the diabolical. And I think, you know, the devil and the radical agency that comes with the concepts around the devil are essential to queerness. It's, you know, you are, you know, in more conservative Christian frameworks, you are, if you are choosing your queerness, you are choosing the devil, choosing hell, choosing sort of give yourself over, give yourself up. And I think that's where, you know, on the witchy side, that's absolutely the aim, the goal, the strategy, and the understanding of the demiurgic role of the devil, I think is important. It's the truly recognizing the where certain powers are held, and the shall we say, utilizing the cleverness of the serpent to make strategic choices about who to work with and who can help you out if you really need something.
Oh, lovely. And what is this is very interesting that you said the demiurgic qualities of the devil. Could you extrapolate on what you meant by that?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of different sets of mythology and lore, and I think the one that I'm referencing here is the devil as very much the ruler of this world, the sphere, and the power over the material, and the demiurgic aspect of that, of being able to manipulate the material and matter at will, and sort of being the, in many ways, the creator of this realm, and the creator of our experience in it. If I want something big done, I think that's sounds like a pretty good person to go to.
Yeah, I love that. Why not just ask the one who built the programming in right. the first place?
Right.
There's also like a ferility and a primalness to the devil as a yes. character. The devil as a spirit who loves their body and tends to try to identify visually as the most like femboy, androgyny, beautiful, I don't know what gender you are, please kiss me, like sort of figure.
Yeah, the ultimate expression, I think, of the erotic in many ways.
Yeah.
Every aspect of what's beautiful, from the full spectrum of gender expression and bodily form expression, I think is wrapped up in the devil.
Oh, and you know what else? The devil is known for being a rainbow. There's another one. Before the fall, Lightbringer was considered a perfect angelic rainbow.
Yeah, sounds gay to me.
Yeah, so super gay. Love that for them. Okay. Well, this has been such a lovely conversation. I had not made so many considerations around nightlife magic before. That was definitely an interesting one, and I'm actually kind of excited to go like try it out now, and go and appreciate my club experience, which I will admit to the podcast world that I do consider myself somewhat of a club kid, actually. People always assume like punk, goth, both of those things are true. I will go to the punk club, I will go to the goth show, but ultimately I cannot shake my club kid upbringing.
You got to get those D&B and dubstep moments in, huh?
I'm, well, not quite like that anymore. I do still listen to a lot of club music, though. I love to go dancing. Dancing's a huge one for me. I use a lot of dancing in my ritual. I think dancing is one of the most like primal ways of like getting yourself liberated from the overactive mind. And it's interesting because you're thinking, I'm trying to elevate myself into a new state of consciousness. But if you utilize the body to do that, it's almost in a way, it carries an eroticism that like formal yogic or Buddhist meditation doesn't quite achieve the same result as doing a meditative technique that is formalized in bodily movement, basically.
Absolutely. And I think the dance has been really huge for me too in ritual, and wasn't until I started doing Bhutto a couple years ago that it really helped me figure out that there's also the receptivity of dance and in the body, and being able to channel the essence of things through more abstracted movements and being able to connect with the animist perspective in a truly embodied way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, well, I always end the podcast with the same question. I like to throw it over to my guest and just say, basically, if there's anything that you would be remiss if we ended the podcast without touching on or without you saying, if you want to read a poem, if you want to give another, you know, bit of advice about some such thing or another, this is your moment and the floor is yours.
Thank you. I would just encourage everyone to figure out some way to dance, whether that's at home, ideally out with other people in a space, but especially when we're so focused on language and our minds, our logical minds are so stimulated all the time. It's so easy to feel really separated from the body, and being able to connect with it, I think, is the fastest way to be more spiritually attuned, to figure out how to inhabit your body. And dancing, in my mind, is the most fun way to do that. You can put it through a lot of stress, and you know, you can work out, meditation, all sorts of things. I think dancing is the most fun. So I encourage everyone to give it a go.
I approve this message. Well, all right. Thank you so much again for joining us, Jove. It was a delight having you.
All the pleasure's mine. Thank you so much, Michaela.